This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. For about 3 months, the community of Chesterton did not have a local newspaper. The Chesterton Tribune closed, and as the new publisher of the paper had put in a Facebook post, a community without a local newspaper is a community in trouble. And we know now that Don Hurt has done his best to take over the Chesterton Tribune, make some changes that the residents in Chesterton and area should be very pleased of. In fact, the good response, and we'll find out more about that. Mr. Hurt, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your radio audience and be able to tell our story about the rebirth and the relaunching of the Chesterton Tribune. It's been really fun to do that.
That's why I understand. Tell us first about the papers that you do own now. It's a pretty wide area here in Northwest Indiana, Northern Indiana, actually.
Yes, it is. I own a total of 20 newspapers, and they, like, I own the Lowell Tribune over there in Lake County, and then there's several small town newspapers in Benton County, Vermilion County, Blasquy County, Wabash, Huntington County, Grant County. I'm all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Miami County, and we always try to, our papers are always hyper local papers. We're all about local names and local faces, and like I mentioned before, you know, a community without a newspaper is kind of lost, because they've lost their cheerleader, they've lost their watchdog, lost their the historian, you know, of the community. So I work very hard in trying to make sure that the papers that we do have and we're going to continue to acquire, you know, stick to that same mantra of being local names and local faces for the communities that they serve.
Now, I understand it wasn't long after the word finally got out that the Chesterton Tribune had to close that there was response. When was it about the time that you learned about the impending closing, or did you learn about it after, unfortunately, the newspaper had ceased publication?
Well, I had learned about it back in November of 2020 when a good friend of mine, he's the executive director of the Hoosier State Press, Steve Key, he told me that the Canwright family had contacted him about, they were thinking about closing the paper, but if he knew anybody who would be interested in buying the paper to get them in touch. So immediately Steve knew that I've been in the acquisition mode for newspapers for the past 3 or 4 years, and so he immediately sent me an email, and it didn't take me too long. Like a half hour after I got his email, I contacted David Canwright, the owner and publisher of the paper there in Chesterton.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a while to get back to me. I guess he was busy, you know, shutting down the paper, and he was very busy of trying to make sure he was getting refunds back to the readers at that point and things. But unfortunately, the paper did close, you know, December 31st, and it wasn't, you know, finally after, you know, the first of the year in 21, he finally responded to one of my emails, and I immediately called him up, and it wasn't 36 hours later we had the deal completed and done, you know. So,
that must be record.
I just wish it hadn't closed, but hey, you do what you have to do.
That must be record time for trying to get an acquisition made like that.
It was pretty quick. I kind of similar to the Lowell paper, I bought the Lowell paper in 2 days, so I guess I beat it by 12 hours, I guess, this time. So, but it's working out very well. I mean, I was just, you know, one of the things why I kept pursuing the Chesterton Tribune was because of the local outpouring of people who wanted their local paper, and that's wonderful. They even started a Facebook page that said Save the Chesterton Tribune, and it had, a couple thousand people who would like that page. So immediately that told me this is a community that loves their newspaper. And then the response, once we finally got the first issue out, you know, in April 22nd was our first issue, and people just, you know, welcomed us with open arms. And that's really refreshing and satisfying for me, because that tells me, you know, this is a community that reads. This is a community that really know, wants a strong, local, vibrant newspaper, and that's what we're going to provide them going forward.
One of the other comments I note from your Facebook post, also with what we mentioned earlier, was that you said here that when a local newspaper stops publishing, almost 100% of the time, it will never come back. It has a negative impact on the community. And obviously, you didn't want to see that happen in Chesterton, and that's obviously the case now, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I visited Chesterton before, and it's a nice community. It's a great community. They got great schools. The Duneland School Corporation is a great school corporation. They got great people. They got a lot of great small businesses downtown there. And then they have some, you know, they have the great, you know, corporate stores there too in the area. But it's a, to me, I see it as a growing community and a community that is sticks together as a family, and they got a great chamber of commerce there. It's just a great community that I'm really fortunate and blessed to be a part of now with the Chesterton Tribune.
We're talking with Don Hurd, who is the new owner and publisher now of the Chesterton Tribune. He owns several other newspapers here in northern Indiana, including the Lowell Tribune and now the Chesterton Tribune. When you look at a newspaper like this, and since you've done this so many times in taking over a newspaper or buying it outright, you obviously have a physical plant that you have to deal with. In this case, with the Chesterton Tribune, did you have much to work with besides just a storefront and maybe more than that?
Well, they have their building downtown there on Calumet Avenue or Street, and then it had been there for decades. You know,
right.
It served the newspaper very, very well. But you know, I'm not really in the mode of acquiring buildings, you know, unless I really have to. And so we didn't really need the building is way more than what we really needed in order to produce the newspaper, because we really don't do any physical production of the newspaper there in Chesterton. We send it to one of our other production facilities, and that works out really, really well. And we moved to another smaller office there, still on Calumet Avenue, and just maybe a half a block from the old building there. But and that's serving us very, very well. But nowadays, you know, in any business, you have to kind of, you know, look at what you need to do in order to be profitable. You know, we kind of run lean and mean in all our operations and not have any extra fat, you know, and most businesses are doing that these days. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them are doing more with less, and we really try to do it. But again, I've been very, very blessed with I have over 60 employees that I have at all our newspapers, and I've been very blessed to have people who are dedicated. They take ownership in what they're doing. And they're very proud of what they're doing. They hold their heads up high when they walk down the street because they know they represent the newspaper in that community.
Speaking of the staff that you have, when you reestablished the newspaper and went back with the press in April, as you mentioned, their first editions coming back online, how many people did you have working at the time, and are you planning to do some expansion over time to be able to maybe not get back to where the Chesterton Tribune used to be, but to make it strong in town again?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we're always planning for expansion, you know, and with expansion, you know, comes expense, and with that expense, you got to be able to pay for it too. So we're taking it in baby steps, and we're very happy, you know, as we continue to grow there, and as the community continues to grow, so will the newspaper. And how we deliver the newspaper now, we deliver it, you know, through the United States Postal Service, and that works out very, very well, you know, once we get the first, you know, some of the kinks worked out, you know. But in all our other newspapers, we are postal delivered, and it works great. But that allows us to be able to reach out further, you know, within not just Chesterton, but over into Valparaiso and some of the other areas that I think are some growth areas for us in order for the newspaper to grow. And it shows me, you know, with the great solid base of readership that we have within Chesterton, you know, I think we'll be able to take upon that and build upon that and expand our base out and go further into Porter County and at large if needs to be. But again, it all comes down to, you know, the revenue streams that we have. And we won't be just a newspaper. You know, we'll be doing some specialty publications. We also offer commercial printing. We have one of our other plants is a full-service commercial printing plant. We can do any and everything concerning printing. We even do direct mail stuff too, so we can do it all. You know, we can be a one-stop shop for any person who's looking to upgrade their marketing services for their business.
Well, I think it's safe to say that community newspapers certainly want to carry on the tradition of being the local job printer in whatever community they happen to be in and branch out from that, because I know that the businesses in a particular town, like in this case in Chesterton and some of the other communities around, want to be able to bring their particular printing jobs to a local guy rather than have to rely on somebody maybe in another state to get something done for them.
Or even another country.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of those things are farmed out, and I like, you know, I like doing business local. I like seeing, I like working with my local, you know, proprietors of their businesses, you know, because it's really nice to work face-to-face with people, you know, and it's much, so much easier, you know, if you need to make changes or whatever or negotiate with people. It's just so much better to do it face-to-face than through a keyboard or over a phone line. I like seeing people's facial expressions, and now since, you know, we're on the tail end, hopefully, of the COVID thing, and we'll be able to see people's faces, expressions without masks on then, too.
What were some of the things that you were able to do at first when you reestablished the Chesterton Tribune in print? And obviously, you're doing so or going to do so online. But at least in print, what did the readers of the paper get to see at first when the newspaper finally got out into their hands?
Well, I hope they saw a fresh new look of the paper. And I think one of the most significant things is, well, actually two things, is full color. We have full color on every page. And I think people enjoy, you know, we live in a colorful world, so why not your newspaper be colorful too? And so we add full color on every page. And plus, you know, we are much more locally oriented with that newspaper. And, you know, I understand their philosophy before, what they were doing when they were a daily newspaper before. And a lot of times they didn't have enough staff or didn't have enough local news. You know, they filled a lot of the pages up with Associated Press wire copy. And with our papers, we don't do that. Actually, we don't subscribe to any Associated Press services because they're way too expensive, you know, especially for small newspapers. You know, those services can cost anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000 a year. And a lot of times paper use those as a crutch, and we don't do that. We want our people out and about, want our news people out and about, and our freelancers out and about, collecting local names and local faces and covering those events that our local readers want to read about.
Well, Don Hurt, it sounds like that the Chesterton Tribune is back and very strong and going to get stronger over time, and we thank you for spending time talking about the newspaper you've acquired along with the others in your newspaper group, and we hope to have a chance to talk again soon and pass along some more good news about the Chesterton Tribune to the community at large. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Chris, for the opportunity, and thank you to your listeners, and, you know, local print journalism is not dead. We're going forward full steam.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio.
And an in-depth interview with Don Hurd can be heard this weekend on Art on the Air, this coming Sunday, June 13th at 7 p.m. here on Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I went into the Army at the age of 17. I was still in high school when I signed up. They would have a delayed entry program. Coming from a big family, you know, the parents couldn't afford college. So try to find a humdrum job or go into the military and see if they can help. I didn't just join the military for the way out, wait for financial assistance. It was like my calling, like a priest to a church. I said, I want to do my part. During that time, I think Desert Storm was just happening. I wanted to serve my country. You take a test, ASVAB test, and you get a grade on it. They take that score and you get a schedule to go to the MEPS. And what that is a huge building. For mine, it was in Boston. And there's one test after the other, you know, the bubble tests. Then you go for one of the biggest physicals I had in my life. All types of blood work, all types of x-rays. You strip down to your underwear in a room full of other guys and they see how you walk to check all your joints. Right towards the end, you sit down with another soldier and you pick what jobs are available. And I wish I knew this back then. There was five jobs portrayed out in front of me, a tanker, a scout, a cook, or a mechanic or something like that. You get to see videos on what they're all on. I didn't want to see what a cook or mechanic was, so I picked a cavalry scout. They offered two different types of college assistance, the Montgomery GI Fund and the GI Bill is what they were. So if I was smart, I would have picked a job that I wanted to do, not on their list, and go to other schoolings like the Airborne Air Assault. But, you know, a 17-year-old kid didn't know. I hopped on an airplane to Louisville, Kentucky. A big old bus picked us up. to Fort Knox, Kentucky, where all my training was together, OSET, one unit station training. It wasn't just a basic. Then I got to go home and go to AIT. It was all together for 17 straight weeks, right? August through December. So I got the heat of Kentucky and the winter of Kentucky. And got a little break after that. And during that time, that's when the war ended, Desert Storm. So they cut me orders to Schweinfurt, Germany. There was a conflict going on at that time with the genocide in Yugoslavia between the Croats, the Serbs, and the Muslims. And we were pretty close to the Czechoslovakian border. We actually were on alert two or three times. They call it railhead, middle of the night, MPs knock on your door, go to the motor pool, get our Bradley, and load up our Bradley onto trains, getting ready to go into another country, but we never did. Probably the best time in the Army I ever had was 2 years over there. I thought the Army would be just like it was being in Germany, because we trained all the time. I mean, we went to the field for a month at a time. Fired all the weapons, wore all the gear. It was nothing but training in my specific job. So when I returned to Fort Knox, it was opposite. It was a support role. I hated it. Had I known what I was getting into, I would have extended into Germany. I wanted to do things. I wanted to jump out of airplanes. I wanted to blow up. I wanted to be the elite soldiers. All my training stopped, and it was showing other soldiers how to be trained, like the wannabe lieutenants, the NCOs moving up, this, that, and the other thing. So I tried to be all I can be, one of the military slogans. I signed up for all types of schools. I signed up to go to airborne, air assault, ranger, and special forces assessment. And every time the orders got kicked back, rejected. We have no money, we have no money. Let the real poor taste in my mouth. When you have about 6 months left on your enlistment, you get reached out from a retention NCO. The only thing that he ever offered me was Hawaii, station of choice. I told him to stick up his and I was done. After I got out of the military and I was bartending, I went to college here in Indiana at one university for a year. I stopped going to school because life happened. You start a family, start a job, and another kid comes along. Time just wasn't there. Eventually, took a class here, took a class there, took a class there, and then 19 years later, all those classes added up. I'm very proud of to complete the military service and be called a veteran and college. Something I promised my mom that I'd do, and I finished it while she was still alive, so my mom knew I graduated. So that was very fulfilling and rewarding to me.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. After a year or so of being allowed to remain out of the pews because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Catholics all across Northwest Indiana will be welcomed back into church beginning on June 11th. And we have with us the person who knows best about the situation, some of the decisions that had to be made that brought us to this point coming up. We have with us the Diocese of Gary Bishop, the Most Reverend Robert McClory with us. And Bishop McClory, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Chris, it's great to be back with you. Of course, we spoke about a year and a half ago.
That's right.
I was getting ready to come. And so it's a joy to be with you to discuss some good news, some transitions in our faith life and our expression of it here in Northwest Indiana.
With, the decision that was made and the announcement that was made earlier this week about the fact that Catholics will be able to come back into church for in-person masses starting June 11th, tell us more about the decision, the discussions. I'm sure there were quite a few discussions, I would imagine, probably all of them on Zoom or some other way of teleconferencing, to talk about the questions that may come up, the issues that may come up, but in turn led to the decision to allow for in-person worship again.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. Yes, central to our life as Christians, one of the commandments and in the Judeo-Christian and other heritage is to keep holy the Lord's Day. So throughout this time of pandemic, that has still remained clear. The question has been, does one need to come to Mass during this time to fulfill what we would say is that obligation? Because that's how we understand it, is that, you come to Mass and you experience it as a community. So, really going back to March of last year, there was a period that our churches effectively were closed to public worship. You could still come in for some private times of prayer. But about a year ago, we did reopen, but there were certainly many people who, because of their own individual health condition, stayed home. And we also thought that because the pandemic was affecting so many people, that we would extend what's called a dispensation, which is a fancy way of saying, you got to keep holy the Lord's Day, but you don't need to come to Mass to do that. So over the course of the last year, we have really learned. We've had certain protocols in place. And so we have seen a gradual return But now with the progress in the pandemic, some of the revisions to the public health guidelines, and with consultation with the laity, it's a more full-throated, invitation to say, of course, there might be exempting causes, particular situations and health needs that you still need to attend to. So if that's you, it's not like we want to make you feel guilty that you're supposed to be in church when you have a health situation. That's not the case.
Would you take a moment and tell us in more specifics about the health conditions and the other conditions that will allow parishioners that if they choose or if they can't for whatever serious reason to be able to go to Mass, basically, and do it in person?
Yeah, so certainly, if you're seriously ill or you have flu-like symptoms or you think you may have a contagious disease, we would by all means say, if you need to quarantine, you need to stay home, don't come to church. Or if you feel that you're unwell, we don't want to put you at risk or somebody else at risk. And also, there are always some people who, through no fault of their own, are not able to make it. They may not have transportation. It's also true that some of our parishes are still navigating accommodating all the folks with some form of social distancing. And so, you need to make sure that you have that accessible to you. But also, we have certain folks who are homebound or they're really incapacitated due to age or infirmity or other medical restrictions. And so we don't want you to go return if you're in that situation. And also, while the vaccine has been widely available, not everybody is able to be vaccinated. I'm fully vaccinated, for which I'm grateful. But if you're not vaccinated and you're in a risk category, then that certainly would be an understandable situation. So, and we also we know that there are some caretakers of those who are infirm. And so if you're home taking care of a loved one or someone who you're responsible for, we would allow that to extend to them as well. So we're trying to be prudent and charitable about all this. And so those would be some of the factors that would continue to say, hey, you need to stay home. That's okay.
Bishop McGlory, will you take a minute and talk about what's happened in the past year or so, the impact that the pandemic and certainly the decisions that had to lead to basically that people had to stay out of the churches would have on not only people, the parishioners, but the parishes and the priests in the parishes? What have they talked about and the impact that's had on them?
Yeah, certainly. I think, as with the rest of society, it was a sudden change for all of us. And what we've really tried to sustain throughout this and looking to the future is to still reach out to those who are not able to come into the churches for whatever reason. So we've really invested many of our parishes in, some simple things like phone trees or increasing social media presence or even doing much more live streaming. And we have, we did see, gradual return to more and more people coming back. But then, when the spike seemed to really hit again, let's say in November, December, right when we're getting ready for Christmas, it seemed like the trends are working a bit against us. So we really tried to be intentional at Christmas time to let folks know that they're still part of the family, even if they can't make it to church or they need to stay home for a variety of reasons. But we tried to be very responsible with sanitizing stations and social distancing. With masking, and we're modifying some of this now as the CDC modifies. But it has been a loss. We're the family of faith, and we use that verbiage a lot. And so it's kind of felt like the whole family's not been together, in person.
No.
And so it'll be really a beautiful time for us to have more of the family come together.
Was it really difficult in the past 8 months here around Christmas and particularly all of the observances that center around Easter for parishioners to be able to feel comfortable and still be able to practice their faith?
Yeah, I think, again, we tried to reach out, and we certainly had, the majority of our parishioners were able to at least come back. But because of the time of pandemic, and which I don't want to say we're out of it yet, it was a little bit challenging for some of them. So we tried to provide some in-home resources as well for those who were not able to make it to Mass, some prayer services that you could do with you and your family, a way to kind of make sure that you're connected during that time. And, really, Chris, has been for us a season always of prayer. But I think we also want to pray and have a conversation about, what we've lost, what we've gained, what we should do now, what we should do in the future. And certainly, we could just kind of turn the page and say, well, the pandemic is starting to recede, so on we go. But it's a good time for us to reflect and say, are there some things that we've embraced during this time that make sense for us to continue because we've learned some lessons? Are there other things that maybe we thought were so important that we were spending a lot of time doing in the past that now we need to reconsider that? So really encouraging the parishes to reflect individually on that. And then also, candidly, and thank you for having me on the air, a time of invitation, you know, really saying, hey, you know, come on back. You know, we're here to keep you safe and healthy and to make sure that you have all the spiritual resources you need from the Catholic Church.
Well, I'm sure that the faithful want to hear from the bishop. They want to hear it in his words, and that was the reason, one of the reasons, of course, we wanted you to come on the program to talk. What does the future look like, in this your estimation, for the Diocese of Gary, as everyone is dealing with the pandemic and as things are starting to lessen in intensity?
Well, I think what we're experiencing, and this is obviously true in the Church as well, you know, is, I would say, a greater return to normalcy. Now, what will that look like as we go into the future? I think, you know, for some people, and I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, there is a kind of a collective I don't know, PTSD, you know, for some, a kind of a post-traumatic stress syndrome where we're still absorbing the last year. I think we've been able to joyfully look to the future. What we're doing really in Northwest Indiana here during this time is I've asked us to continue a season of prayer for hope and healing, because I think that's really what we need. We need hope, and I see signs of that increasing, and also healing, and healing not just because we're still absorbing the physical effects of COVID, but we've had a pretty tumultuous year from social disharmony and racial tensions and a greater sense of needing to address some injustices in the world and, you know, certainly a climate of divisiveness. And so we really need to pray for healing in our families, healing in our community, and also for hope. So I do look to the future with hope. I certainly see signs that people are embracing an additional kind of return to some practices, including their faith practices, that maybe they've gotten away from over the last year.
Well, Bishop McClory, thank you very much for spending time with us. And if you've mentioned a lot in our conversation so far, but if there's anything else that you feel that you want to add to at least reassure more people, and I guess we're doing I guess in a way it's a rather religious pep talk, isn't it, to be able to welcome everybody back that has missed being in church for Mass, to be sure. Do you think that they're ready? Do you think that they are the residents in Northwest Indiana who are faithful Catholics are ready to return?
I think so. I'll tell you, you know, a concrete example that we had really good outdoor turnout, you know, because outdoor events have been a little bit more open, obviously. But, you know, when I led what are called the Stations of the Cross at the Shrine of Christ's Passion on Good Friday, and that was an outdoor event. And so people felt very comfortable coming. Everybody, you know, was respected the different protocols. But, you know, to see the desire that people had, certainly in that setting, to come together and to pray, shows me that there is a pent-up desire to return. I would encourage, you know, call your local parish to see what specifically they're doing. As we transition back, you know, each parish is making sure that they have the specific protocols to meet their own needs, but we want to keep you safe and make sure that you feel comfortable as you return. So, you know, calling your local parishes would certainly be good. I would say, Chris, you know, one of the things that I think we need to reflect on is kind of a delayed grieving. You know, a lot of funerals that were not held with the same, public rites of worship and mourning and coming together to grieve. So I think we need to reflect a bit on how we can respond to those needs. I'm going to be at a funeral this summer that's really been almost delayed by about a full year.
Wow.
Because of family concerns. And so, you know, some of those things that we really yearn for in our hearts to be able to come together around those moments, I think we'll need to listen and we'll need to respond. And we're certainly here to do that as the Catholic Church in Northwest Indiana.
Well, Bishop McClory, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about the changes that will take effect here with the Catholic churches in Northwest Indiana beginning on June 11th, and our best to everybody, certainly at the parishes and the parishioners that will be coming back. And we know it's going to be a joyous time. It may be less so for some people, but for most, I'm sure it will be. And thank you for spending time with us to talk about it.
Amen. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome. We've been speaking with the Most Reverend Robert McClory. He is the Bishop of the Diocese of Gary. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and hope you'll be with us tomorrow, where we'll have a conversation with Post-Tribune columnist Phil Potempa. He's going to be putting on a special one-man show soon. We'll tell you more about it tomorrow.